Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
Cliffcentral.com.
I'm Adrian Groenewald. This is Leadership Masterclass, all about leadership. And in the studio with me, Davi from Sibanye Gold. It's now just Sibanye, pretty much, eh? So we've got Davi in the studio, and we've got Alice and then Louis, three panel members discussing leadership. We discussed adaptive leadership in the first part of the show. Now on the line, we have Thomas Conditi. It's great to have him with us. Thomas, welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation and the flexibility.
It's good to have you on the line with us, Thomas. So you're the leader of General Electric here in South Africa and also Transportation in Africa, but you are a born Kenyan. Let's just get that out of the way. So you're from there. And in a minute, how did you end up at General Electric? How did your career path unfold?
Well, let's see. As you correctly said, I grew up in Nairobi. I was born there and went to high school, and then like many, looked for places to do my university. Ended up settling on the United States in the cold state of Wisconsin, in the middle of the country and in the north. By going through the process of getting my engineering, I ended up getting to doing my MBA in the U.S., and that's where GE came to do some recruiting. And I didn't even know who they were, but they offered a free lunch for the recruiting, and I went, and that's how I ended up at GE.
You're making yourself very vulnerable now. I mean, that's so honest.
That's authenticity, Thomas.
You do an MBA and you don't know who General Electric is. But have you, so you started at General Electric. It's obviously a legendary company. The Jack Walshes and many others have put that organization on the map, but it's been around longer than all of us have lived. Have you been exposed to the legendary Crotonville Academy, or what is it called exactly?
Absolutely. That's one of the first things that you do inside of GE is, you do get onto the circuit of training, and Crotonville is a core place for almost every GE employee. And actually, we probably bring in as many non-GE people as GE people. But I started out there really almost my first week.
Okay, so you've rubbed shoulders with that place that we all read about in books and has that developed you? I'm going to ask you a kind of an orthodox question. What three elements developed you best as a leader? We know you're a leader. You've led at the CFO level. You've led across and worked across, I read somewhere, 30 countries. We know you travel Africa. Okay. There we go. He's just joined us in the studio. Let's pull that chair up. That's better, man.
This is adaptive leadership.
That is it. That is it. We've been adapting, and thank you so much. He's just walking the studio. We've been on the cell phone. And to get that back on track, welcome in the studio.
Thank you.
Thomas, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
All right. So the question I have is, you know, this show is all about ultimately leadership development, because we call it a leadership masterclass. If you had to say what are the three elements that developed you best as a leader throughout your life? Now, there might be many crossroads and many pivotal moments and so on and so forth, but three things that played the greatest role,
sure,
across your life, not just the last 5 years or so.
Well, I think, first of all, I think having a sense of vision or destination. I don't mean vision as in visionary, but knowing where you're trying to go. My life, I essentially looked at in 5-year blocks. I wouldn't say, well, in 10 years I want to be so and so, or being too transactional. But in 5-year blocks, you tend to make decisions that you think will work for you maybe better a year from now than they might work today. It also gives you, I think, a sense of purpose and clarity around why you're doing things and where you're going. And then the world, as I have found out, every 5 years changes a lot. If you just go back and look at, 1995 when I was coming into GE, there was no internet. 5 years later, the world is completely different with the internet.
But the 5-year cycle is probably getting shorter, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, especially with some of the what we look at as more earthquake type changes. You look at Brexit. That's going to make a huge difference.
What's Brexit?
Yeah, that's...
Imagine if you don't know that.
Slight hashtag. Topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I think five-year outlook. Okay. I think the second thing is being very self-aware. I would say that hopefully I'm my own worst critic, I try to get ahead of the masses when they're looking at me. If somebody brings something up that's a surprise to me, I consider that to be actually one of my bigger defects if I haven't thought about it already. And I think the third one is understand what your legacy is. And I had this discussion with somebody the other day. It generally is people. And who have you helped along the way? Who have you affected, whether it's positive or negative along the way? It's less about what building you've built or what business you've built. But people will remember you forever, whereas, you know, your boss will remember your projects just for this year.
Mm. Okay, and in a moment I'll ask some of you to comment on that. So those three elements you think had a big impact on your personal leadership journey and development. Now, our first half hour, I have to bring this in very quickly.
Sure.
We spoke about adaptive leadership. What's the best question we can ask him, Davi? Is what are the qualities a leader needs in order to be a great adaptive leader in this world that where change really is constant? Where things happen today, news breaks today. You know, things really happen in the now. It's almost frightening if you think about it. So we know you have to be a good adaptive leader. Two or three qualities that a leader needs in order to be a brilliant adaptive leader.
Can I throw something in there before you answer?
Make it more difficult.
Not sure. Leadership's about influence.
Yeah.
And it's about people who say that. But with the speed of change and the context where we operate, in answering what does this mean? Because it's speed all the time, and it's just picking up. And it is about your ability to influence key direction and key decisions. How do you adapt in that kind of environment when what is really at stake here is possibly more than just survival?
And one can make it more complex as you're more visible as a leader. So you must make decisions faster than ever before. People are less patient with your mistakes. Mm. It's more visible. Okay, yep, here we go.
So I think a few things. One is I reset every day, meaning I get up in the morning and there's probably 15 things that were on the list for yesterday. I try to reset in the morning and look at what's on task for today. What are the changes that have happened overnight? What have I thought through a little bit better that I need to address during that day? It also helps to, I think, keep you a little more sane, because if you've gone through a long day, even a long week of lots of different things happening, you can get. I think you can fall behind, and you can also look at it as a little bit overwhelming. But the reset every day basically says, "All right, it's a new day. Let's really treat it as a fresh start." The second thing is, and I think this has to do with the discussion around network and how you are influence, how you influence. You know, it only after about 20 years did I realize that all the daft people I went to school with are actually just as smart as I am and have moved as far as, if not further ahead than I have. Now, if I had known that 20 years ago, I would have been a much better friend to a lot of people. And I think it's wise to remember that your network is built with the people in the now, the people you're working with today. They may not be, there's always a normal distribution. They may not be the smartest person in your room, but you're usually with a lot of smart people. And so as time goes on, you build those connections, you maintain those connections, and that helps you, I think, influence down the road. It certainly helps with an organization like GE where you have, literally 300,000 people you have to be able to connect with somehow. And I'd say the third thing around adaptive leadership is you do not stop learning. I think after 25 years of managing other people, you would have thought that I'd come across, all the different types. I guarantee you, my last year in managing a new team and a new business and a new environment, I have 50% of my stuff that I've thrown out the window or maybe put it into the shelf and learn another 50%. So never stop learning.
Okay. All right. So there's those three points. And then the previous three points, let's quickly all of you comment on what Thomas said. Let's turn to discussion in terms of how he developed as a leader or then his views on adaptive leadership. Louis? Alice.
Yeah, what I just want to ask Thomas is with regards to the shrinking that we're seeing in the 5-year cycle. Because, the legend of GE obviously evolves around Jack Welch. But we've seen the tenure of CEOs shrink as well. You know, Jack Welch was at GE for more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Although Jeff Immelt is getting there, isn't
he's
he?
Getting there too.
Yeah.
So, from your view, Thomas, how is this, you know, 5-year cycle, you know, a shaping decision making for, you know, in terms of leadership within the corporate or within a small business and so forth? Is it building a sense of agency in terms of how people lead?
Absolutely. I think there's, I'll give you sort of the corporate answer than my own. The corporate answer is you have to get rid of the things that slow you down in making change. And, so that means, you know, things like get rid of buildings, get rid of, you know, lots of pension structures or structures that don't enable you to change quickly. Don't go into, negotiations or agreements where you have 10 years worth of tail, 10 years worth of things to change. Because if you decide to exit that sector, in 3 years, for whatever reason, you'll be stuck. And so don't build an infrastructure that locks you in and makes you less agile. I think it also then turns into how do you look at the trends? You know, you used to look at 5-year, 10-year trends. Where's the gold industry? You know, where's mining going, etc. As we all know, a trend is maybe 10 months. Maybe not, especially with in the last decade of the internet. So I think it's really reevaluating the trends almost consistently. And we've gone away from this is a GE thing, but we've gone away from the 3-year outlook in a business plan to just tell me what your blueprint is, and every quarter come and tell me how you're updating it.
Mm. And that's now policy. That's kind of your culture.
That's policy. We pretty much dispensed with the forward looking plan. The forward-looking 3-year. We've just gone to, you know, just give me an update every quarter. Tell me how it's looking for the next 3 years, for the next 3 years, for the next 3 years. So that changes how you think about things as well. I think the other thing is people are much more comfortable when they know what to expect. And if you tell people to expect change, they will deal with change much more effectively than if you say, this is how it is, and then 6 months down the road, you say, hold on, we're selling this, we're buying this, we're restructuring that. It drives a lot of internal heat and energy that could otherwise be spent in actually making that change happen. So I think it's setting expectations that, you know, I tell my team, hey, if you don't like something, wait 6 months, it's going to change. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you like something, enjoy it, because in 6 months it may change. Mm.
Darby, Louis, any comments on what Thomas has brought up here in his conversation, also with regards to your question earlier?
Yeah. Look, I've got one question, and that is, I mean, a business is given direction through the senior leadership, and the CEO plays a very important part there. What are your thoughts around leadership alignment? You know, people like us, bringing people in there that think, behave, aligned towards the same kind of characteristics of what you want, versus a perceived more dynamic leadership where people challenge one another and get to a better outcome. Your thoughts?
Well, there's, having a capable leadership team is obviously, I think, a standard starting point. Mm. Is do you have people on the team that can actually get the job done? Mm. Now you have to balance that with even in leadership, you want people to learn, and so there's some level of on the job development that they need to do. Mm. So you have to create enough of a space for people to learn. But I think that having or not having clarity around the joint objectives is where you start to go wrong. You may have people who know what they're doing, who are very comfortable in taking the lead or taking the initiative, but if you're not aligned on the 6 things that we're trying to deliver for this quarter or for this year, then that ends up really, I think, hurting everybody. You can get some momentum from the first few months, but beyond that becomes real difficult.
All right, Louis, comments, and then I want us to go to Africa, to Brexit. Let's just say something about that, you know, the bigger context that leaders are leading within. Any comments on?
When we discuss things like leadership, we love to look for something new all the time. What Thomas has been saying is heavily based on principles that he's learned to trust and believe, and I believe that his self-belief is closely tied to that one. We mustn't underestimate the value of those things. Those things shouldn't change. Mm. It's flexible. That's his attitude towards change as well. Instead of always looking for new things, you know, make sure that you understand what really drives you. The self-knowledge is a very important factor, which he puts in a different way. I think it's very, very important.
All right. Broader context, and I'm going to start actually with Alice. Okay. Britain exited the EU. I don't know if you, Alice was the Business Report editor for 6 years until January. So he's got this context and passion about these issues. Yeah. And then each of you give your comment.
Are you saying I'm biased?
You're just a journalist, man. So you're going to be cynical, but not in this instance, though. So your views on Britain exiting, obviously the whole world is in turmoil, unsure, unstable. No one knows where things are going. And I think it's kind of unprecedented in some ways and maybe in some ways not. Just your view on how that changes the context that we now need to adapt to as leaders, and then we'll go to Thomas and Darby and Louis.
You know, when that news broke, the mere fact that there was to be a referendum on this whole thing, I was like, wow, do they know what they're getting them, you know, David Cameron is getting himself into? But indeed it happened, you know, the UK votes, you know, to leave the European Union. You know, I was in Europe in 97. And at that time, they were just on the cusp of launching, you know, the monetary union, which was to introduce the euro. And to now think that just by a stroke of, you know, a cross, you can undo something that take decades, you know, to put together, just goes to show how much, you know, of an incredible time we're living in, we find ourselves in. So my sense is that ultimately, it's something that Europe has to go through because, again, we've seen the shifts in terms of the haves and the have-nots. Even when you look at economies, European Union has worked for Germany because, again, it's the strongest economy in that part of the world. But then you have this nationalistic fervor that's emerging where a lot of blue-collar type, you know, communities are feeling that Europe hasn't worked for us. Mm. You know, jobs have been shifted around. You know, trade deals haven't, you know, materialized in terms of what, you know, people were kind of promised back in the days. So I think it leads us into a very uncertain, you know, future.
Even, where we are.
Especially when you're looking at the 2-year, you know, window that people are saying it's how long it's going to take to get, you know, the UK out. But for Africa, again, it just means that, you know, in terms of where the world is shifting, we got to get our act together here, make Africa work for us where we are, because in the geopolitical sort of sense of how things are shifting, I mean, this is a victory for a bipolar world, which we thought we were moving away from, you know. So for the US, for China, this is great. I don't know about Russia, but I think it's worth, you know, keeping a close eye in terms of how Russia, you know, plays this going forward.
Kjoch, we could talk to you, just to you, about this for a long while. Good context there. Thomas, your feelings about this and affecting us as leaders, how we need to adapt, and in Africa, South Africa, but also I guess your colleagues at your level are talking about this and engaging. What's the pulse saying?
Well, absolutely. We, as a company, were very supportive of Britain remaining in the EU. We have 100,000 employees in Europe. We have 20,000 in the UK. The structures that have been put in place have reduced the cost of doing business between the multiple groupings, and it makes, you know, it's something that we've been arguing for globally, even in Africa, is regionalization is a much better economic play than having, you know, standalone countries, borders and barriers. Free movement of people is something that helps to grow. Now, saying that, I think you look at this and you say, you know, three things from a leadership perspective. One is, don't be tone deaf. If everyone is singing in one direction, and because you either have a law or a structure or a government that looks like X, don't be tone deaf, because it can come. They can actually come back and bite you. And I think that applies not only to what we've seen in Europe, but, you know, to our region as well, is you can ignore it. Doesn't mean it's going away. Okay. And it could apply anywhere in the U.S. as well. I think the other one is I think it's an earthquake, and there, you know, buildings will fall, but people will rebuild. I think you'll see new ways of doing things in Europe as well as in the U.K. And I would argue that, the other 20, I think it's 27 or 25 27. Countries, 27. There's going to be a lot of soul searching around, is the EU doing for us what it wanted us, what we wanted?
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
See if it works. All right, Davi, you're in the mining industry, the foremost mining company that we have around here, and Progressive. You guys have obviously talked about this. Your thoughts, feelings?
Well, obviously, for the near term, we're in gold and platinum. So on the gold side, we see that investors would flock to certainty. You
know, yeah.
As a result of the uncertainty, flock into gold.
Uh-huh.
So we've seen that rally. We believe that into the near term, it will continue, which is not a bad thing for us as a company because it makes us, you know, or it allows for us to trade probably. Having said that, it brings complacency into the company, you know, because it's, again, not the fundamentals that create the stock to run. Mm. It's context, rather. Having said that, just a step back, you know, Britain probably, or the EU, was on the basis of consolidated EU kind of trade. We have seen that people don't average up, they average down, you know, in terms of productivity and stuff like that when there's a big brother around. So maybe the unbundling is required in order to get them sorted out. The last point I would like to maybe just raise is that from a South African context perspective, this is the opportunity for us that as leaders, we should actually rally towards changing policy, getting a friendly investor kind of environment where investors would flock to SADC, flock into Africa, because there's different opportunities. The EU is going to go through change that will impact on the US and everybody else. Where will investors go? Where there's a safe haven. Is Africa not ready for that? Maybe we should take the lead.
In fact, what Dave is saying is so interesting in the context of what's happening not far from where you live, Ajand. I mean, in Zwane. You know, the protests we've seen there, that is something that speaks of a particular need. You know, a lot of our political structures that we currently have in place were meant to be transitory to help us through the transition, but they've become embedded. So is there, are these sort of protests a call for some sort of disruption in a positive sense to get us on a new path?
Man, the fight against the establishment is the thing now. And wherever you represent the establishment, you must be very careful, because the world is tired of non-performance, which they associate with the establishment. Now, gentlemen, our time is almost up. I'm going to stretch it just a minute or three more, if I may. We're not going to do this now, but we could have a long discussion about David Cameron, his leadership, and how he dealt with it, and the resignation just after. Was it clever? Was it selfish? That's a fascinating conversation in and of itself. But Thomas, I just want to quickly know from you as a business leader, just to get a standpoint point out there. What do you expect from our political leadership as a business leader here in South Africa? And then I want to differentiate a little bit and say, as an outside business, not a, although you've been here so long, but you're not just a business functioning here, you're also US based.
Multinational.
Your expectations, if our cabinet was listening here now to this show, what do you expect from them?
Well, I think two things. One is, we have 180 choices in terms of countries we can go and do business in. That's the benefit of being a multinational, is you have options, you have investment returns that you can look at. I think I would look at the multinational today as a great partner if you have them do what they're good at. They're good at evaluating the market. They're good at investing. They're good at developing systems, processes, and people. We certainly think we're good at that. And so if you're leveraging us as a partner in that way, then you have to look at what we come to the table for, which is if I'm making an investment for 10 years, give me a return that is somewhat, not guaranteed, but is somewhat safeguarded, at least by the government and the structures, for 10 years. You can't ask me to do a major, sign up for a major contract, invest a lot, and then 6 months later say, oops, I want to change it. That is a good way to get not only me, but also a lot of other similar companies to look elsewhere. So I think that's my message is, you also have a lot of interest in doing good, not just doing well. And it's part of, I think, a lot of corporations' capabilities as well as their values. And so if we want to do good, you create an environment that says this is a good investment to make, that we'll be there as your partner through the time, you will get a lot of people that will say, well, let me take myself from places where I don't get that. And I think South Africa is really perfectly poised. We have an underlying infrastructure base. Even though we complain about a lot of stuff, we have a lot.
Okay.
We have a lot.
All right, gentlemen, let's bring this to an end with a final thought. Each of you, just I don't know, I'm going to put you on the spot and say just a comment, advice to leaders, maybe in the context of today's conversation. There's a lot of leaders that are listening now who will be listening to this the podcast afterwards. In the context of adaptive leadership or the final conversation we had now about the broader context, your final leadership tip, and I want to put this under the Sibanye Executive Leadership Inspirational Thought. We always have a thought here that's kind of represented by the Sibanye Executive. So I don't know, I'll put your last, Darby, because of the Sibanye one. Let's go with Louis, and then Alice, and then go with Thomas.
Right, in the light of our discussions today, I'll say the only constant is good leadership. It's the only thing that's constant.
Nice. Louis, Alice.
For me, I think leaders have to, we all have to acknowledge that the context has changed. Disruption is all around us. And as I said earlier, you now can succeed spectacularly and also fail spectacularly because the world is watching.
All right. Thomas Conditi, CEO, General Electric here. Southern tip of Africa.
Change happens. Reset every day. Take care of your people. You should be fine.
Darby.
Yeah, I would think that on the back of what was said, you've got to trust yourself. You've got to enjoy the journey. It can't just be about the challenge. It's also got to be winning. You've got to win and you've got to survive at the same time. So live in the moment, but live as a leader. And as soon as you change tact and you change yourself towards, I'm here because I want to be here and I want to influence and I want to be part of the solution, it becomes something that you do because you want to do it.
All right, fantastic. And we're now going with Thomas just for a few minutes after the show. I'll be leaving the studio just to engage the Sibanye managers out there. They have a few questions for you. Thank you for joining us. Next up, our leadership or our business masterclass for 60 minutes. First, we have a conversation around growth and scalability with Adam Rabinowitz from, he represents USB Ed. And then the second half, we talk to an interesting guy that I've been following a little bit here up in Africa. He created something called 1 Billion Africa. Prince Adu Apaya, he's in South Africa for Bright Young Minds Conference, and he started a business that hopefully will make a difference across Africa. So he'll be our SME owner conversation. So next up, our business masterclass.
This is CliffCentral.com. Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
This is CliffCentral.com.